lift.
Good morning and welcome to Midday, coming to you live today from the Minnesota Public Radio booth at the Minnesota State Fair. I'm Gary Eichten, and today we're going to honor a long, grand tradition here at the fair, one that goes back at least to the days of Teddy Roosevelt and his famous Speak Softly and Carry a Big Stick speech that was given right here on the fairgrounds. Today on Midday, we're going to talk politics. Specifically, we have two debates today, featuring the independents and DFL candidates for the 4th District Congressional seat currently held by Democrat Bruce Vento. Primary election is just 12 days from now, and two of the people who are going to be on our stage today will move on to the November general election against Republican candidate Linda Runbeck. All the others are going to be eliminated. Polls seem to indicate that many 4th District voters haven't decided who to support yet, and perhaps today's debates will help some of you make up your mind. Now, we should note, even if you don't live in the 4th District, this race is worth paying attention to. In fact, people all around the country are watching this race because how it turns out could indeed affect who controls the U.S. House. Over the noon hour, we're going to be talking with the DFL candidates, but this first hour we've been joined by the two candidates seeking the Independence Party's nomination, Pam Ellison and Tom Foley. Pam Ellison is a political consultant. She was active in the Jesse Ventura campaign. She's a former assistant to Lieutenant Governor May Shunk, and also has worked as a daycare provider. She is the party's endorsed candidate. Tom Foley was Ramsey County Attorney for 16 years. He was Bill Clinton's presidential campaign chair in Minnesota in 1992. He was a lobbyist representing Minnesota interests in Washington earlier this year. He has twice unsuccessfully sought the DFL party's nomination for statewide office for the U.S. Senate in 94 and for lieutenant governor last year. Now, in terms of format, we'll be asking the candidates some questions. We also encourage those of you here in our State Fair audience to step up to the mic with your questions. St. Paul Pioneer Press is co-sponsoring our debates today, and Pioneer Press editorial editor, page editor Ron Clark is standing by to get your questions on the air, so don't be shy. Get your questions in. Those of you listening on the radio, give us a call with your questions. Our call-in number, again, is 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. Outside the Twin Cities, 1-800-242-2828. If you're near a computer, you can watch our debate on our website, and that's minnesotapublicradio.org. And I suppose one other thing that we should point out, if you don't have your congressional maps in front of you, the 4th Congressional District includes the city of St. Paul and some surrounding suburban areas. About 60% of the district's residents actually live in the surrounding suburbs. Well, okay. Pam Ellison, Tom Foley, thanks for coming by today.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Gary.
Let's begin here. I want to give each of you a minute or two to give us an idea of why it is you decided to run for Congress. Tom Foley, why don't you start?
Well, Gary, I think this is a great opportunity for the country as we move into the new century. I want to lead the way to real political reform and break up the monopoly that the other two parties have really had on government. I think we need a new way of thinking. We got to think different. We got to look at our governmental structures, and the type of programs that affect people's lives have to be nonpartisan. Right now, we've got the far right and the far left bickering and battling over Congress, and I think what the public want, they want to pass laws that are good for the 60 or 70, they're good for everybody, but the 70% of the people in the American center want laws that help them in health care and education and environment and affordable housing and transportation. They don't want to be polarized by the two political parties and the power structures that control those two political parties, so that's why I'm running.
Pam Ellison?
I'm running because I met a man in 1995 who told me that it isn't important to be a career politician to make a difference in society. He told me that we needed to get special interests out of politics, that there needs to be a strong line of delineation between government and business. That man is Jesse Ventura. And I don't represent any of those other groups. I feel that we need to engage the citizen more in politics again and get people excited about running themselves. I think we need what's wrong with Washington and at the state level is we need term limits and we need campaign finance reform. And we can do that and still care about the environment and still care about business and still care about education and health care. So that's why I'm running. I feel like I can make a difference, and I can make a difference by going to Washington and choosing the best ideas from both sides.
Now, a couple of election-related questions. as Independence Party voters think about who to support here, we do have an endorsed candidate, Pam Ellison, and we have a candidate, Tom Foley, who, according to the polls, is running very strong against both the Republicans and the Democrats. How much should those things be factors when Independence Party voters try to make a choice, the endorsement versus strong early support in the polls?
Well, Gary, I think the people all are the ultimate choosers, and the people who make the decision, and that's why we have primary races. I'm excited to be running for this office. I was excited to represent and proud to represent Governor Ventura to fight for the positions and represent all of the state of Minnesota and Washington, D.C., and their interests on health care and housing and environment and a number of issues. So I think the people are the ultimate decision makers. I've been a leader on a number of issues in the 4th District for a long time, and I look forward to engaging the all of the people. I've been door knocking and talking on the phone and meeting with groups, and I just think it's a great opportunity, and I'm glad that you're sponsoring this so we can talk about these issues.
Pam?
Well, I think this race isn't about Governor Ventura. This race is about the people of the 4th District. And this is about what can citizens bring to Washington and what are the citizens' desires. I believe that being a citizen myself, working a full-time job, being a middle-income person with children in the education system, I understand what it is like to be an average citizen every day. And I think that what we need to do is, first of all, the endorsement, I think, is important. But I think when the endorsement process isn't working, it's just reflective of what's going on in the country at large. People don't want to vote for somebody that other people tell them to vote for. They want to vote for the candidate they think is best. And I think this is just an example of our country moving to more of a populist election system, and I favor that.
Mm-hmm. Now, we have deployed a crack investigative team to look into this race and have come to the conclusion that one of the candidates is a woman, one is a man. Should gender be a factor here?
That is true. I am a man, so I think people know who I am when I talk on the radio.
Should that be a factor?
I don't think so. I think people want to look at who is the best candidate to represent them on the issues that they're concerned about. I mean, if their parents or loved ones have cancer, I don't think they go into a hospital and say, let's see, do I want a man doctor or a woman doctor? They want the most capable doctor, the most capable medicine available to protect their loved ones. Likewise in government, I think people want to hear the candidates, listen to their issues, and then make a decision in who truly can lead their issues in Washington, D.C. I think I'm that person. I'm looking forward to it, and I invite comments and opinions from people of the 4th District and throughout Minnesota, because I get a lot of comments from people outside the 4th District. But that's how we shape our government. We've got to restructure our governmental institutions, and that's why I want to be in this race.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the gender issue goes, no, it isn't about gender. I would agree. But it seems to me that the two people that were making it a gender issue in the press that I've seen has been my opponent and Mr. Steve Novak. We women know we have to do the best. We have to rise to the occasion and be as good as the men. But I do want to remind people that women are not very well represented in government. And it was 100 years ago that we got the vote, and yet we're still not sending women to Washington. And I do think women bring something to the mix that men don't. Do I think you should vote for me because I'm a woman? No, I do not. I think you should vote for me because I'm the best person to represent the average middle-class worker in our society in Minnesota, and my decisions in Congress will be reflective of that. And that's why I think that it's important for you to get educated, check our websites out, check out our literature, and decide where you stand on the issues. I'm running an issue-based campaign, and I will continue to do so.
Whoever gets elected, if either one of you gets elected, you will not be a member of either the Republican or Democratic caucuses in the U.S. House. So much seems to get done on that basis. How can you have any influence whatsoever?
Well, I think that's been the traditional way things have been done, and that's what's polarized our country. You have the far right pulling the Republicans farther to the right, the left Democrats pulling them to the left. Look back in 1994 when we really had a wonderful opportunity to have real health care reform in this country, which affects all our lives. and both parties could not get together. Senator David Durenberger tried to take some leadership, some bipartisan leadership, in bringing Republicans and Democrats together. We have not had health care reform since that time. So I think, as an independent, I intend to caucus as an independent, but I think if the, particularly the House of Representatives, is controlled by less than five votes, it gives you an opportunity to work with all of those people from both sides and all the political spectrums and say, you're demanding them to come together so to have some bipartisan representation, and that's the type of government I think we need to move towards.
I think there's something else going on here besides partisan politics, however, and that is lobbyists and special interest money. I mean, these people won't have true health care reform because the people given to their campaigns are lobbyists and organizations such as Tom has been in the past. The prescriptive drug companies, the health care insurance industry, those are the people that are lining the pockets of politicians in Congress. And so until you're able to have campaign finance reform, it's not the partisan bickering as much as it is classism that we're seeing at its finest or its worst, however you'd like to characterize it. And so until we have some real reform in campaign finance reform, we're not going to be able to move ahead because special interests will always play too big a role in making good decisions for this nation. And it's got to stop.
You know, Pam mentions that I lobbied, and I was proud to be a lobbyist for the state of Minnesota. Government Ventura asked me to go out there and to lobby on behalf of the people of the state of Minnesota so that their interests were protected in Washington, and I was proud to do that to represent the governor in Washington, D.C.
But let me say one thing. The lobbyists, the true lobbyists for the state, should be the elected officials you send there. You don't need a lobbyist doing that. It's the job of congressional elected officials as well as senators to lobby on the best parts for the state of Minnesota. They're the ones that you sent there by voting you there. So that's what I think. I think that, yes, in our system as it stands now, we do need lobbyists. But I want to see a system where when somebody gets elected, they're the true voice that speaks for the people, not some lobbyist that's sent there on their behalf. It's an elected official that needs to be making those decisions and be looking after the interests of the 4th District of Minnesota and the nation.
And Pam, that's exactly what happens in Washington, D.C. You work with your elected senators, your elected congressmen, and you also work with the administration and the cabinet officials and sub-cabinet officials. But the governor's office wants someone, a staff member in Washington, working on his behalf so that he can come out. He can't spend all his time in Washington, D.C. But when Governor Ventura goes to Washington, D.C., he's very effective, whether it was in free trade to China, whether it was milk and dairy price supports, whether it's children's health insurance or health care. Governor Ventura does a wonderful job, and I was proud to help him on all of those issues.
And we have a director in the Minnesota State Office that can handle all that stuff. That's what the director of the State Office in Washington is for. I think that Governor Ventura is great when he goes out, but it's because of who he is and because of what he says, and yes, he's informed, but the director of his office can provide those services for him.
That's what I was, the director of that office, so I was proud to do that.
If you just tuned in, we're broadcasting live today from the Minnesota State Fair, Minnesota Public Radio booth, right across from the Major League Baseball exhibit. If you're out at the fair, make sure you stop by our booth. We're at the corner of Judson and Nelson. And today we are featuring two debates among the candidates for the 4th District Congressional seat, currently held by Democrat Bruce Vento, who has announced that he's not seeking re-election. This hour we're talking with the Independence Party candidates, Tom Foley and Pam Ellison. Over the noon hour, all four of the DFL candidates will be joining us. Again, those of you here in the audience, if you've got a question for the candidates, step up to the mic. Ron Clark will help you out there, get you all squared away. And if you're listening on the radio, number to call is 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000, outside the Twin Cities, 1-800-242-2828. Pam, you mentioned the role of special interest financing in elections and discussions, public policy discussions in Washington. Should we move to total public financing of federal campaigns?
Absolutely, we should. We should do what we do in the state of Minnesota with the PCR program, where the state is willing to fund campaigns that way. We need to have a level playing field in this country, and so that the people who are the best candidates are the best candidates because they are the best candidates, not because they're spending millions of dollars to be the best candidates. I mean, I'm just appalled at what both parties have spent on the presidential election so far. I mean, you could fund a small nation for what they're doing, and I think that citizens are tired of it. We want to have elections, and we want people to run on issues. We want people to run because they're diligent, and they're not going to back down because of connections they've had to politicians in the past, but they're going to go there and be a broker for the citizen, for the citizen. And that's what it's about. And so I really do think that we need to look at that, and maybe we would bring more good people to government if we did that.
Tom Foley, total public financing of federal elections.
I don't think you'll ever have total public financing, but I think we do need realistic public financing. We really need campaign finance reform in this country. If you look at the amounts of money and the soft money and the special interest contributions going to both political parties, and you know why people aren't coming together in a bipartisan coalition to solve the problems of health care and energy and environment, is because, again, they're pulled by the fringes of both parties, and we want more bipartisan governing. Look at what John McCain did. Look at the chord that he resonated in talking about campaign finance reform in his campaign for president. But what happened? His own party deserted him on that issue, and there's been no meaningful reform. There's been some small steps. I think he made a good step in making sure that the independent expenditures, the 527 expenditures that it's called, now people have to identify when they contribute to those organizations that spend money on campaigns. But we need to get rid of the soft money. I think the John McCain bill, along with Senator Feingold in Wisconsin, is a good start, but we do need more public monies. We need more access to the media. We need instantaneous and credible reporting, and until we have that, a lot of the issues we want to solve in a bipartisan nature for government will not be solved until we get meaningful campaign finance reform.
Ivor's on the line from Eden Prairie with a question for our Independence Party candidates. Ivor, go ahead, please.
Yeah, this is a question for Tom Foley in particular. I was wondering, Mr. Foley, since you'd been a DFLer for 16 years, what would prevent you from being elected to office and then switching parties back to the DFL sometime in the future?
I guess nothing but my word. I'm running as an independent. I intend to be elected as an independent, and I intend to caucus as an independent. So that's what I intend to do. You know, there are two other independents in Congress. There is a congressman from Vermont named Bernie Sanders, who is a socialist, and he caucuses with the Democrats. He's a far-left congressman. Then there's a congressman from Virginia named Virgil Good, who caucuses with the Republican Party. But I intend to be an independent and not caucus with either party and represent the people of the 4th District of Minnesota.
Can I respond to that, Sue?
Sure.
Thanks for calling in, Ivor. That's a great question. And one thing I want to say is that when I go to Congress as an independent, you need to remember that there are only 5 seats that are going to swing the majority in the House. If we elect 2 or 3 independents across this nation, we can have an independent caucus in Congress. And I think the reason the other 2 haven't done that is because there's 2 of them. But as we bring more people along, of course, I've been a lifelong independent, never been attached to either party. I don't look at politics through the filter of either party. I take the best ideas, regardless of where they come from, and work with them for the benefit of the citizen.
Back to the phones. Norm's on the line with a question for the candidates, Pam Ellison and Tom Foley. Norm, your question?
Yes, I was very gratified to hear your comments so far about health care reform. But I'd like to have you amplify on that a little bit in terms of universal health insurance, health insurance that anybody can get, whether it's on an individual basis or a group basis, small company, large company, health insurance without discrimination, regardless of pre-existing medical conditions, without discrimination based upon age, for instance. Where you have community rating so that you're not discriminated against just because of a certain risk group that you're presumed to fall into. So if you'd either one of you would like to take that on, I'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Norm. Pam Ellison?
Well, what I'd like to say is I heard Mike Osterholm on the radio today, and his quote was, spending wisely is a wonderful thing, meaning we don't have to raise taxation, but we need to prioritize better on what really matters, look at the programs we're spending money on, and recommit those funds to issues like health care reform. I want to just say 2 quick things. Canada covers everyone in their country. In fact, if you're visiting in Canada, they also care for you. And to cover their entire country, it ends up being 9% of their budget, which is a big chunk. However, if you look at the U.S., 47 million people in this country are not covered because they cannot afford it. Yet we spend 14% of our budget on health care. How can that be? That's a travesty. We need to look at single-payer or universal health care for everyone because it's the right thing to do.
Tom Foley?
You know, we need some meaningful health care reform in this country, and it starts with the way we address Medicare in this country. Right now, Minnesota is being penalized for doing a good job containing their cost in the early 1990s, because what the government did is they took the cost structure that existed in the early 1990s and spread it out throughout the country. So a person on Medicare getting benefits in Minnesota will get half as much as the benefits of someone in Florida. They'll get maybe $400 in Minnesota for all of their medical coverage, whereas in Florida they'll get like $800. So Florida builds into their Medicare system and their HMO system prescription drug coverage. And so all of that is covered by their governmental programs. In Minnesota, what happens? We're shortchanged because of the politics, again, of the special interest, because Medicare shortchanges Minnesota. And so if we want prescription drug coverage in many of those programs, we have to pay supplemental $200 and $300 per month to our senior citizens. So we have to have health care that's true across this country. It has to be. I don't like the single payer plan that Pam Ellison advocates like Canada. I think we need a government plan along with private sector plans where people can go to their private doctors that they have selected, but it should be equal and fair and cover everybody. It should be universal coverage, but I think it has to be a combination of the private sector as well as government.
St. Paul Pioneer Press is co-sponsoring our debate today, and editorial page editor Ron Clark standing by now with a question from our audience. Ron?
Gary, we have Eileen Corey from St. Paul in the 4th District. She's wearing a number of buttons, including one for Pam Ellison, and she wants to ask a question of Tom Foley.
Mr. Foley, my question is, when you were unable to debate with Pam Ellison, you sent a ringer. But what a ringer. He had led the Democratic caucus. He is very much a Democrat. And most of your staff are former Democrats. I know we can't all be independents, people. I have been for a long time because I am sick to death of the Democrats and the Republicans playing their little boy games.
Which staff members are you referring to? Anyway, I have support from a number of people. I have Democratic supporters. I've got Republican supporters. I've got independent supporters. And don't think that any one of us running for office, either as an independent Republican or a Democrat, aren't trying to reach out to everyone in this race to be elected for Congress. I think Governor Ventura showed he would not be elected just on independent vote. He reached out to independents and Republicans alike. He wants a bigger tent. He wants people to come in there. I'm proud to have a number of co-chairs, Republicans and Democrats. Herb Brooks is a co-chair of mine, has been very active as a coach at the University of Minnesota and as an Olympic hockey coach. Susan Gertner, who's a Democrat, who's a Ramsey County attorney, is a co-chair of my campaign. Ann Barkaloo, who is very active in the Dayton Hudson Foundation. Elizabeth DeCourcy. The list goes on and on. I have men and women, Republicans, Democrats, independents. And so we'd like all of you to join our campaign because we want to bring true, real reform to politics and not the special interests. So, yes, I'm proud to have their support.
Pam Ellison, care to comment?
I'll just comment by saying that, yes, we do need to get more people out to vote. And I would say that there are Republicans and Democrats alike supporting me as well. But what I think the question or comment refers to is that we need independent thinkers, because when we go to Washington or we go to the state, we want to make sure we don't turn away an idea that would come from either side of the aisle simply because they're coming from either side of the aisle. We want to look at all ideas, be creative, be innovative, and make sure that we're looking for the best ideas to come to light. And that comes from all sorts of places, both sides of the aisle, as well as Bernie Sanders, who may characterize himself as a socialist. But if you talk to people in Vermont, he's representing the people of Vermont the way they choose to be represented. So I think what we want to do is encourage people to come out. And what I'm focusing on are those people who have given up on government, because there's nothing to vote for anymore. And I want those people to come back to the polls, get engaged, and move forward, and let's take this country somewhere instead of always looking at the high corporate profit margins and base everything solely on the economy. We have to take care of our seniors, we have to take care of people on health care, and we have to take care of campaign finance reform so that we can do these things.
Well, you know, getting back to the question, I think one of the great things that Governor Ventura did do, if you look at the people he brought into his government to truly have a tripartisan government, he's got members of the Independence Party. He's got a number of prominent Democratic officials working with him, including Ted Mondo, head of the Metropolitan Council. He's got Charlie Weaver, who ran as a Republican for Attorney General, as his public safety director. So you want to bring those people in to help government because it forces bi- and tripartisan decision-making, and so you get the best decision-makers. So that's what I want to do, and again, I'm proud of having Republican, Democrat, and Independent supporters.
We're going to have to take a break here for some news headlines, but if you just joined us, we're listening today to the two Independence Party candidates for the 4th District Congressional seat, currently held by Democrat Bruce Vento. The September primary is closing in fast now, just 12 days away on September 12th. And one of these two candidates, Pam Ellison or Tom Foley, will move on to the November general election. Great opportunity to find out more about where they stand on the issues. If you're listening at home, give us a call at 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. Outside the Twin Cities, 1-800-242-2828. Those of you here in the audience, Ron Clark, the St. Paul Pioneer Press, will get you up here, and we've got a gentleman, in fact, standing by. We'll get to your question right after the news. Don't be shy, though. We'd like to get your questions on. A reminder, over the noon hour today, the four DFL candidates for the congressional seat will be joining us here on the stage. Now, if you don't think you're going to be able to make it out to the state fair and our state fair booth this year, the Minnesota Public Radio website, minnesotapublicradio.org, can bring a piece of the fair to you. Today we're having Web Day at the NPR State Fair booth. Join us online for photos, live audio streams, and a special web-only version of Songs of the State and the Fair. And while you're there, don't forget to submit your story to the Minnesota Scrapbook online today at minnesotapublicradio.org.
Today's programming is made possible in part by the advocates of Minnesota Public Radio. Contributors include Department 56, marketers of giftware and fine collectibles, and G&K Services, a premier provider of quality uniform and related services.
Time now for news headlines. Here's Greta Cunningham. Greta?
Good morning, Gary. Federal investigators are linking more deadly accidents to Bridgestone-Firestone tires. They've already investigating more than 60 deaths that may have stemmed from problems with some of the tires. The company recalled millions of tires following reports of tread loss and blowouts. The Clinton administration is continuing to lash out at a GOP bill that would repeal the federal inheritance tax. President Clinton is expected to veto the bill today in a White House ceremony. The bill would repeal the tax gradually over 10 years at a cost of $105 billion. Republicans say farmers and business owners have to buy expensive insurance to cover the tax or pay for legal aid to reduce or avoid it. But critics say a repeal of the tax would affect the estates of fewer than 2% of Americans. A new study says the idea of going postal is a myth and that postal workers aren't more likely to face violence on the job than other workers. But it also finds a high number of grievances by postal workers and recommends steps to reduce labor management tensions. Postmaster General William Henderson says some of the suggestions will be brought up in negotiations with the Postal Service major labor unions. He says he'll also take steps to modernize the service's grievance process. Princess Diana's admirers are gathering at the site where she died 3 years ago today. Hundreds of people came to the unofficial shrine above the Paris Tunnel where Diana died in a car crash. In regional news, AAA officials say Minnesota drivers will be paying more for gas this weekend than they did last Labor Day. They say the high prices are due to higher crude oil prices spurred by the start of the production of winter heating oil. The forecast for Minnesota today calls for cloudy skies in the south with a chance of afternoon thunderstorms. High temperatures today ranging from 65 in the far northwest to near 90 in the far southeast. Checking conditions around the region at this hour, mostly fair skies reported in. St. Cloud reports fair skies in 68. Skies are fair in Rochester in 82. Duluth reports fair skies in 65 degrees. And in the Twin Cities at this hour, fair skies, a temperature of 82 degrees. That's a look at the latest news.
All right, thanks, Greta. It's about 25 minutes now before noon. This is Midday, coming to you live today from the Minnesota Public Radio booth out at the State Fair, right across from the new Major League Baseball exhibit, about halfway between the Haunted House and the Coliseum. We're easy to find, and it's worth stopping by. We've got lots of things to show you. There's a drawing. I guess they're giving away a trip for four some kind of a dog sled deal? And, well, they have all the information. It's worth stopping by here. We have the Independence Party candidates joining us. They're running for the 4th District Congressional seat. Pam Ellison and Tom Foley, they've come by this hour to talk about the issues. Next hour, it'll be the DFL candidates. Again, if you're listening on the radio, give us a call, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Those of you here in the audience, Ron Clark of the St. Paul Pioneer Press, co-sponsor of today's debate, will get you on the air. Ron, go ahead, please.
We have a question from Mike Price of Fridley for either candidate. Mike is on crutches from a recent auto accident and is wearing a James Gibson for U.S. Senate T-shirt.
I really was going to ask a question about James Gibson, but my question is having to do with defense. Do you really believe that we need to maintain or increase funding for a missile defense system? And in addition, do you believe that the United States should increase or decrease its role as a police state internationally?
You know, I think in the defense arena, we really have to take a realistic look at what we're doing. With all of the new technology moving, I think we can start reducing the overall cost of the Defense Department. But what we've done is we have reduced the Defense Department research and development budget by too much. I think we've cut it like 7 or 8%, and we should be increasing it 12 or 13% on the research and development, because what's going on in the Pentagon right now is there really is a debate and kind of a mentality approaching our defense which is viewing the world as the Cold War. And the world has changed. We're not fighting the Cold War anymore. The type of incursions we're having are either small humanitarian, I shouldn't say small, but isolated humanitarian efforts, whether it's like we did in Somalia or Kosovo or other parts of Africa, versus the Mideast war. So I think we have to have smarter technology. We have to build better weapon systems, including some missile defense systems, if they work. The ones that I've seen right now, the research is really not working. The three tests that they send up don't work. But what we have, we've developed the Abrams tank, our 90-ton tanks that we sent over to Kosovo, and those tanks couldn't even go through the streets of Kosovo because they're too heavy, and they were designed for a military of another age. What we need are more rapid deployment troops. We need better technology. We need the type of weapons, say a smaller tank that will work and be highly maneuverable, and that can send missiles out from it if it has to. We have to look at more unmanned type of bombers rather than manned bombers. So I think there's a real debate going on. I think we can overall reduce. We do have to increase the military pay, because the pay for our troops has just been horrid. But you have to look at this entire structure. You just can't say, should we spend more on missile defense? I think we need more mobility, agility, unmanned type of weaponry.
Pam Ellison.
This is where my opponent and I differ greatly. I believe that first on the list shouldn't be technology and equipment. First on the list should be our personnel and our training, making sure that they're paid appropriately. I don't think that we need to have our troops, you know, 11 different places in the world trying to sort out human rights issues when we have human rights issues in this country that need attention. I think that missile defense is, again, a throwback to the Cold War. I think in the World Trade Organization, things are going to change for us militarily. We're going to have to reexamine how we defend our country, and a strong defense should be just that, a defense. And the last thing I want to say is, do you realize that most of our military contracts for equipment are done by foreign entities? We better start getting that back into the United States and buy American. It doesn't make any sense security-wise, and it doesn't make sense economically for our country to be piecemealing things out to other organizations. I mean, that's a security risk. And you don't have to be a career politician to understand that. A mom from St. Paul can figure it out.
Okay, yes and no, or yes or no answer. Should we have intervened in Kosovo?
Yes.
I don't know. I think that region has been just militarily a hot spot for centuries. I don't think us being there or not being there is going to change that. I think there are terrible human rights violations there that we need to speak to. But for us to commit our troops there, they are a sovereign. That's a sovereign nation. Those are sovereign nations over there.
Is that a no?
I would say I'm leaning no.
Okay.
I think the problem has been our intervention has not been consistent, and what we have to do is develop some guidelines of what are in our national interests, What kind of a commitment can we make? And hopefully it can be a regionalized approach with NATO or other nations intervening. But to watch what happened in Central Africa, where we sat back and literally a whole group of people were wiped out, is just intolerable as a nation. So what we have to do is intervene, but we have to have some guidelines, and we have to have some exit strategies, and we have to work with coalitions of government.
Got a caller on the line with a phone question for the candidates. Ron, go ahead, please.
Yes, I want to know what you're going to do for subsidized housing.
Affordable housing is a big issue. Should the federal government substantially increase the amount of money it's spending on affordable housing programs?
Absolutely. I think the federal government has got to be a partner. Now, probably not necessarily a direct subsidy, but the federal government has got to be a partner with state and local governments in terms of bringing about incentives to have more affordable housing. We can't have a workforce in the 4th District or of all of Minnesota unless we have affordable housing for people. It's going to drive them out, and we can't get the employees in the workforce of tomorrow. Our IRS code, Internal Revenue Code, has to change so that we have incentives for affordable housing. We've got to work with our house financing agency. So there's a critical role for the federal government, and there are programs, but to work with the local government in the state and the private sector to develop affordable housing.
Pam Ellison, sharp increase in federal funding for affordable housing programs?
Well, I think the whole HUD program needs to be looked at and reviewed, and yes, I mean, I think the only role of federal government is to partner in a financial perspective and send the cash. I mean, the states and the local entities know what they need in their areas and know what is wise in their areas, and I don't want to take that away from the local control. However, I do want to state something. We need to get low and middle-income families to be able to purchase their own properties. In Minneapolis, we have hundreds and hundreds of boarded-up properties that have been boarded up for years. And why aren't we unboarding those, rehabbing them, and seeing that low to middle-income families can get into those properties? We need to think creatively and not just throw up rental units that stigmatize people and where they live.
Ron Clark, another question out here from our audience.
Gary, we have a question from Pat Dolman of White Bear Lake.
I'd like to ask both candidates whom they intend to support for the presidential race.
Oh, I'll gladly answer that first. I'll have to jump in. You're always going first, so I'm going to jump
in.
I'm going to say that definitely I will be supporting the third party. I feel that that's what is the difference between voting status quo and voting for change. And I don't know if it'll be Nader or if it will be John Hagelin, but both of those candidates are great candidates in my estimation. And I think that the only way that we can change the status quo is to start voting away from the status quo. So I'll definitely be, I don't know who it'll be, but that's where I'm leaning.
Tom Foley?
I haven't decided to publicly support any of the candidates. Obviously, I'm running for Congress and hoping to have votes from Republicans, Democrats, and Independents. I think Governor Ventura, as a third-party candidate, struck the right chord and said he wants to endorse policies and programs of the different candidates without saying who he's going to vote for. And I think I'll take that same thing. I have strong feelings with a number of the issues they're working on, but publicly at this time, I'm not going to back any of the candidates.
Back to the phones. Char's on the line from Maple with a question for the candidates. Char?
Yes, thank you. As a true blue Democrat, I hear Tom Foley saying that the far left has taken over the Democratic Party, and I kind of disagree with that. It seems like the centrists have taken over people like Tom Foley. I'd like him to define what he means by the far left. What are those constituents of the party?
Well, I think the people, if you look at what we were doing in healthcare reform in the mid-90s, certainly the far left wanted a government-run single-payer healthcare proposal and would not compromise on any of those issues. I still think the National Party is pretty much, that National Party has actually moved. I think the State Party is still pretty much controlled by the what I would consider the far left and not the centrist issues that I think appeal to the voters of Minnesota in a bipartisan and tripartisan nature.
Mm-hmm. Can I comment?
Sure.
First of all, I want to say something that to characterize single-payer health care as being far left is, I think, a little far-reaching when the majority of countries in the world support single-payer health care in some form. And when I say single-payer, I don't mean we copy the Canadian model, but we find something that works for our country. I think that people, again, this comes down to partisanship, and I think that that's something that we need to get rid of. I think if there are good ideas, they should come from wherever the good ideas come from. And I will state that again, that I just think that I think that we're going to see more and more people gravitate to the candidates that make sense, irrespective of party lines.
Ron Clark, another question here from our audience at the State Fair.
Gary, we have Susie Tockley from Bemidji that's in the 7th Congressional District, but she has a question for our candidates here.
Well, first I'd like to hi to everybody from Bemidji area.
Yay!
And I'm one of the disabled. What are you guys going to do about the Special Olympics program and about the disabled?
I think the disabled and the health care, I think it's a critical, critical issue in our entire healthcare component, and certainly number of issues related to mental illness as it also works in our healthcare system is something that we can't forget the people that are disadvantaged and handicapped. And I think it's a high priority in the whole healthcare industry to make sure that we have the resources to help those people.
I think the big concern that I have is to make sure that those that are disabled have access to workplace. I think we're still struggling with workplaces that haven't been retrofitted properly, particularly the smaller businesses. And let's remind the folks that small business drives this economy even more so than the Fortune 500 companies do. And I think we need to make sure that accessibility for disabled people happens in small businesses too. And I don't think we're where we need to be yet.
Tax cuts. Do you, either one of you, support any kind, any form of a significant tax cut?
I think certainly I support tax cuts. I don't embrace overall tax cuts and give our projected surplus away. I think I favor a more money going to overall debt reduction, that we've accumulated trillions of dollars of debt over the past, most of it in the past 10 to 15 years. But certainly we should have tax cuts of, say, around $500 billion, but they should be targeted. They should be put in the health care arena. We have to shore up our Social Security. We have to have targeted tax cuts which would help people with education, particularly post-secondary education. So I think we don't want to give the money away. We got to make sure there really is a surplus there. We don't know if the surplus is going to bear up, so we can't give it all away. So I think as we move forward, we have to take some measured steps, but certainly tax cuts are included in my agenda.
Pam Allison?
Well, I guess I would say that as long as we have a debt, we don't have a surplus, people. I mean, my dad taught me that when he taught me how to balance my checkbook. That's not something that you have to have a degree for to understand. If we have a debt, we need to pay down the debt. And then I think that we need to go after those programs that aren't effective, that we're loading hundreds and thousands and millions of dollars into, and redirecting those funds where they make sense, to the disabled, to housing the mentally ill, and to health care and education. That's how we can accomplish that, and we can accomplish that by not raising taxes at all. If we're ready to sit down and prioritize and actually be proactive and look at the future instead of just react all the time to things that come our way.
Social Security, very briefly, do you support any kind of a privatization, any form of privatization of Social Security?
I think we have to redirect our projected budget surpluses to absolutely make sure we shore up Social Security completely. I think we should put a lockbox on it, and we make sure that that is a stable fund for people that have been paying into it for years and years. I think we should also look at developing programs so that people can also contribute additional funds, whether it's through an IRA or a 401k plan or some supplementary retirement programs, because people really can't retire on Social Security alone. So I think we need a combination of things. But first of all, we have to shore up Social Security because we've been ripping it off for too long.
Pam Allison?
Well, I don't favor the Rod Graham's plan at all, which is just let everybody invest what they want to invest. But I do think that people are frustrated with government and the reaction of government to them. And I think sometimes the quick fix for them is to be able to invest part of their money. Now, I don't oppose that, but I do think that we need to do something bigger than that. I think we need to secure Social Security, make sure the government isn't using it to subsidize other things. But also, we need to look at the original model of Social Security. It hasn't been looked at for decades, and we need to see why isn't the model working. You don't just keep throwing money at something. You need to find out why it isn't working. But we need to secure Social Security for those who have paid into it. We need to make sure that we cherish our elderly and make sure that they're taken care of. And the bottom line, I think that nations will be judged not on how much profit they make, but on how they care for their people. So we need to keep Social Security secure.
Not a lot of time left, but let's get at least one more question on from our audience here. Ron?
Gary, we have Christine Stone from Maplewood. She's wearing a Betty McCollum tag, and she wants to ask a question about health care to Tom Foley.
Yes. As you can see by my tag, I've made up my mind already, and nothing I've heard here today will change it. I did appreciate Pam's comment on the single payer. I don't know if that's the way to go, but at least it's a plan and that I've looked at. But my question to Tom Foley is, give us some specifics on what you're going to do about health care. I've been an advocate for 12 years on health care, and I know all the problems. So give me some specifics.
I thought I talked before, but let me just mention a couple of things. Maybe you weren't here when I was talking before, but I certainly think in the Medicare area, we have to do a complete restructuring of the type of money that goes to the beneficiaries. Minnesota is being shortchanged by the amount of money that's being given to New York and Florida. Our recipients don't have the same type of programs through either Medicare or our HMO programs because we have to buy some supplemental insurance to cover prescription drugs where they don't have to do that in Florida and California, because when we created the model of Medicare, we implemented the formula that was established back in the early 90s. We've got to change that because all of the Midwest, but particularly Minnesota, is being shortchanged. Also, the University of Minnesota, we've got to shore up our medical school there that are bringing doctors into Minnesota. Right now, we can't even fill some of the specialty residencies that are going on, and if people are going to be looking for medical care in the Twin Cities, and if we don't have those doctors coming out of the University of Minnesota, they're not going to be able to get the medical care here. They're going to have to go to some other state or the coast, because we're losing doctors in droves, and it's just not right. We need a proper medical system here in Minnesota.
Okay, a couple more quick questions.
Can I just respond
very
to that
briefly,
really quickly?
Very briefly.
You know, I favor the single-payer health care system, but I'm telling you, to save Medicare and save Social Security and bring down the cost of prescription drugs, those are no-brainers, people, but they're quick fixes. We can quick fix something and give people relief, but we need true reform. And until we can control profits that the health industry is making, until the government can say, we're not going to allow you to get these kinds of profits, but operate closely to the bottom line, we're not going to fix it.
I wouldn't say that our whole restructure of our health care system is a no-brainer. I think they're very complex issues that you've got to deal with, and that's why I want to go to Congress. It's just not, that's a no-brainer, let's fix it.
Okay, two quick questions, kind of yes and no answers. Two big House votes that have been taken in the last couple of years. House voted to impeach President Clinton. How would you have voted, Tom Foley?
I don't think I would have voted to impeach him.
Pam Ellison?
Yes, I would have, because he lied.
Okay, and the House recently voted to extend permanent normal trade relations to China. How would you have voted, Pam Ellison?
I would have voted yes.
I would have voted. Absolutely, I would have supported that.
Okay. Thanks to both of you for coming by today, and good luck in your campaign.
Thanks a lot, Gary.
Thank you very much for having us.
Independence Party candidates for the 4th District Congressional seat, currently held by Democrat Bruce Vento, Pam Ellison, and Tom Foley. And thanks to all of you who've been with us. Now, don't go away, because right after we break for some news, the four DFL candidates for the 4th District seat will be joining us here, and an opportunity to find out where they stand on the issues. Of course, the primary is right around the corner, September 12th. Decisions must be made, and it's a great opportunity to learn a little bit more about where the candidates stand on the issues. Just a reminder, on our website, minnesotapublicradio.org, there is an ongoing forum on the 4th District race, and we hope you'll be able to participate in that.
When the news is serious, it can be alarming.
Your money's not here.
It's not here.
When the news isn't serious, it's Dale Connolly reporting.
The Russian mafia is using it to produce bootleg vodka. We loaned some of it to Johnny to set up the website where you can talk to real cowboy girls live.
A news program not to be believed. Friday night at 11, Saturday afternoon at 2 on Minnesota Public Radio, KNOW 91.1 FM in Twin Cities.
Don't be so gloomy.
Thank you. And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, the 31st of August, 2000. It's the birthday in Fresno, California, 1908. Writer William Saroyan, best known for his work that came out during the Depression. Humorous stories about the joys of life in the midst of poverty, in the midst of Armenian people. His first collection was The Daring Young Man and the Flying Trapeze, 1931. In the preface, he said, "Try as much as possible to be wholly alive with all your might, and when you laugh, laugh like hell, and when you get angry, get good and angry." Published several more collections and novels in the 30s and 40s, The Human Comedy, My Name is Aram, most of them somewhat autobiographical, set in small-town California. Won the Pulitzer Prize for his play The Time of Your Life in 1940. His parents had fled Armenia around the turn of the century and settled in Fresno. And shortly before he died, Saroyan wrote about the Armenians, "I would like to see any power of the world destroy this race, this small tribe of unimportant people, whose wars have all been fought and lost, whose structures have crumbled, literature is unread, music is unheard, and prayers are no more answered. Go ahead, destroy Armenia, send them into the desert without bread or water, burn their homes and churches, then see if they will not laugh, sing, and pray again. For when two of them meet anywhere in the world, see if they will not create a new Armenia." It's the birthday of William Shawn, 1907, Chicago, who edited the New Yorker magazine from 1952 to 1987. One of the last of the great line editors who oversaw the editing line by line of every piece that he published, even those by very famous writers, J.D. Salinger, Truman Capote, Pauline Kael, Joseph Brodsky, Philip Roth, Jamaica Kincaid, and many other writers. He was an anonymous man and rarely gave interviews or let himself be photographed. People who worked with him for decades knew very little about him except that he came from Chicago. Here's a poem for today by Howard Moss, set in the lobby of a famous old literary hotel in New York City, the Algonquin, entitled At the Algonquin. He sat at the Algonquin smoking a cigar. A coffin of a clock bonged out the time. She was 10 minutes late, but in that time he puffed the blue eternity of his cigar. Did she love him still? His youth was gone. Humiliation's toad, with its blank stares, squatted on his conscience. When they went upstairs, some version of them both would soon be gone. Before that, though, drinks, dinner, and a play, the whole demanding, dull expense account you paid these days for things of no account. Whatever love may be, it's not child's play. Slowly she walked toward him. God, we are unnatural animals. The scent of roses filled the room. Above the carpets, roses. And getting up, he said, "Ah, there you are." A poem by Howard Moss at the Algonquin from his new selected poems published by Athenaeum. That's the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, August 31st, made possible by 21NorthMain.com, where book lovers find more than 10 million used, rare, and antiquarian books on the web at 21NorthMain.com. Production assistance from Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Regional broadcasts of the Writer's Almanac are supported by Marquette Banks, your community bank, offering a broad range of financial services for your business and personal needs.
News headlines are next, and then right after the news, we'll be joined by the DFL candidates for the 4th District Congressional.